is we're about to begin a new sugya. So I'll say something just a little bit as an introduction to the sugya, just to put things into perspective before we begin the sugya per se. It's really the sugya of kavua. Kavua is a very, very difficult sugya. We hopefully try to make it as simple as possible. The kavua objectively is a very difficult sugya. It is a very difficult concept just to really wrap around why kavua works, how kavua works, what kavua is. So we shouldn't have any chalishas adas. Nobody should feel bad if at the end of the sugya we still have a couple of questions. Because it said in the name of Chaim, the Reb Chaim said that there are about three or four sugyas in Shas that he felt that he just still didn't grasp. And one of them was kavua. So not so bad. So if we could get to the point where all we don't understand is Reb Chaim's degree of not understanding kavua, we have accomplished an awful lot. So without introduction, let's say we start to begin kavua. So the first question is, what in the world does kavua mean? So the term kavua is we will speak about the example in a moment, is addressing a topic of Rov. Of course, we have definitely spoken about Rov many, many times. But as we started to talk about the very end of the show yesterday, what's the bridge into today's sugya, is that the principle of Rov appears in different applications. It's all ultimately the same in the sense of it's a majority, but majorities present themselves in really three distinct ways in halacha. One is the principle of bitul barov, which is, of course, what we've been talking about for most of the last couple of weeks. So bitul barov presupposes that there is a ta'aroves, that there are a whole bunch of items that we cannot identify which is which. There are multiple items that are in suffolk, but we happen to know that out of these multiple items that are all in doubt, most of them, at one time, we knew were kosher. At one time, we knew that one of them was treif, and now we have a mixture of the above. So then we step around Matos, bitul rov kicks in, and again, according to many, is an epoch, etc. That's one application of rov, the one that we're most familiar with. But there are two other applications of rov as well, where there is no tarovus whatsoever. There is no mixture. All that there is a latus a suffix. We have a suffix about one particular issue, one particular item. There's a suffix about. We don't know what to do with this item, not because this item is nisare with other things. There is no tarovus, there is no mixture, but there's what's called the latest asafik. There's a safik about a given item, about a given object, a given person, etc. What do you do? So we have a way of determining that the odds are that everything is okay. Or the odds are everything is not okay. The odds are this is Tomei, the odds are this is Tor, the odds are this is Asa, the odds are this is Mutter. Statistically, we can make a statement that most probably such and such is true. There is no taroves, there are no multiple items, there is simply a latest a suffix on a chaticha achas, on one piece of meat, one person, one item, and we're trying to figure out, do we have odds pointing in another direction? That's an entirely different type of rove. It's true, it is a valid rove, but it is working through a very, very different mechanism of rove. Within that kind of rove, where I have a suffering about one given item, and now I have rove that I'm invoking to tell me simply what the odds are, within that parsha of rove, we can further break it down to two different categories. There are two different types of roves that can be playing out. One is what's called the ruba de isekamon, and one is what's called the ruba de leisekamon. A ruba de isekamon means that I have a suffix about this particular item, and I have a majority. How did I determine the majority? I simply counted up everything around me. All factors that are pointing, anything that's bearing down on this suffix, anything that is contributing to my suffix, I take a pencil and paper, and I simply check off the boxes. I have one mutter, one mutter, one mutter, one mutter, one usher, one mutter, one mutter, one usher. Now I have a latest a suffix about this item. I did not see the word tarovus. There is no tarovus. Nothing is mixed up with anything. I have one item that's omed b'suffik, but I can point to 10 different items that are bearing down on this suffix. 9 of them happen to be mutter. 1 of them is osur. Therefore, the odds are this item is mutter. Of course, the classic example of that is the case of teisha chanuyos. The famous 9 butcher stores selling kosher meat, and 1 selling treif. So for example, a person walks down West Englewood Avenue, his mom and the restaurants are open. So the person walks down West Englewood Avenue and he finds a piece of meat on the floor. What? And he has no idea where this meat came from. It's one piece of meat. There's no tarobas. A tarobas of what? There's one piece of meat. A tarobas of stores? That's a joke. There's not a tarobas. I know this is the coast of the trip. There's no suffering of the stores. So there is no tarobas to speak of. I have a piece of meat and I'm independently trying to determine where did this meat come from. So I look around at all the possible sources that could have contributed to the suffering. Now, I'm not going to go look at stores in Chicago because there's no way in the world that a piece of meat in West Englewood Avenue came from Chicago. So it is obvious that the only stores that are contributing to the suffering are the stores that theoretically this meat could have come from. Where could this piece of meat have come from? It could have, again, you could test by Mikias now in the shopping area. So it could have come possibly from Chickies. It could have, may have come from Dougie's. It may have come from Yala, I think it's one of the stores down the bottom of the block. I can list you off 5-6 different stores there. It could have come from around the corner. It could have come from the Humble Toast. Maybe it came from the Doghouse. And there are a lot of stores that could have contributed to this suffix. You know what? There's another store. Those who know the area well, there's a store on the corner called the Caribbean something or other right now. It's that store. It's the only store that's sitting sticking out like a sore thumb on the block. It's not under the RCBC. It's a Trafer store in La Gambra. So it could be that the piece of meat came from that store. So it's a perfect example. 9 out of the 10 stores that are possible sources for this piece of meat are kosher. One of them is Treif. The suffix is, so the row is such that I can count them up on my fingers. I count. Dougie's, Czech, 1. Chickies, 2. Humble Toast, 3. Whatever the names are, 4. Caribbean, 1. Ooh, 4-1, 9-1, 10-1, 100-1. That's what the Ruben de Issa come on. A Ruben de Issa come on works. Ruben de Issa come on is also considered to be a row. Now again, both Bitla Merov and what we call Ruben de Issa come on, or we sometimes just say Azlin and Bosa Ruben, we follow Rove, are both invoking the principle of Rove being in different ways. And there's a third kind of Rove. There's a Rove of also a similar kind of a thing. I have a suffix about that. I have one chatikah. There is no tarobas here. I have one chatikah, one item in front of me, and I want to know, Rabbi, did it come from a Davra Mut or Davra Aser? So let's say, for example, I have a cup of milk in front of me on the table. And I have no idea where this milk came from. I know it came from a cow, but I don't know, did the cow that it came from, even though I know this cow, I know it came from, I only have one cow. So I have one cow in my barn. I know that this milk came from this cow, but I'm not sure, is this cow a treifa or not? Does this cow have a hole in its stomach or not? If it does, then the milk is a yotzim and a treifa. If it doesn't, then the milk is kosher. So what's the din? How would I even assess that? There's no tarobas here, because I see the cow in front of me, I see the milk in front of me, and nothing's mixed up with anything else. There is no Ruben de Issa come on, there's no numbers I can count, there's no one sitting around and counting cows in the world. So what possibly can I invoke to be mata this milk? So the Gemara explains in the beginning of my second chulin, first parak, this is what's called a Ruben de Issa come on, namely that statistically, most cows do not have holes in their stomach. How do I know that information? Somebody sat down and counted every single cow and came up with that number? It's absurd. The answer is that if they did have holes in their stomachs, cows would be dying right and left all the time. They'd be treifas. And we just don't see that happening. It just appears to us in nature that the statistics are, it's not that way. The overwhelming odds are the cow does not have a hole in its stomach. That is not a tarobes, so it's not bitl barov. That is not even a Ruben de Issa come on, because I didn't count up the rove. That is an assessment based on observation of facts in this world, that a rove exists, and that's also called a rove. So those are three very, very different kinds of roves. There's bitl barov, there's Ruben de Issa come on, and there's Ruben de Issa come on. It is within that middle rove, that row of Ruben de Issa come on, the famous case of the 9 stores, that the Gemara puts the brakes on that row in the following way. I have my 10 stores, 9 selling kosher, 1 selling treif, and I find a piece of meat on the floor, the din is I can eat that meat. Minatar for sure, maybe there may be chumers, the rabbanim for other reasons, purely technical, not relevant for our discussion. But the Ikra did have a lot to eat that meat because of Rav. Nevertheless, comes the Gemara, we start with the second of our comments for a moment, comes the Gemara in Chulin Sadihem and Aleph, and quotes a very, very famous Braisa. Teisha Chanuyas Kulon Marchus Musash Chuta. I have 9 stores selling kosher meat. Yachas Mechares Pesad HaMeila. One of them is selling trade meat. V'lokach Me'achas Mehem. And I went into one of those stores. My wife sent me shopping. Not the first time, not the last time. But she sent me shopping and I wasn't paying attention to what I was supposed to be doing. I know she sent me to West Angle Avenue to go pick up a dinner for tonight. But I was on the phone. I was on this. I was listening to a share. I was drinking a cup. I was talking to somebody. And I walked into a store, placed my order, walked out, didn't bother to take the receipt, so I don't know where the meat came from. And now I'm standing on the corner. I don't remember. Did I go into Chickies or Duggies? Or did I go into the Caribbean store? I just can't remember which store I went into. So if you would ask me, I would say, what's the big deal? Count up the stores on the block. 9 out of 10 of them are selling kosher meat, 1 selling trade meat. What's the shiloh? Comes to Bryce and says, sorry. It is also to eat that meat. That's called the sofek d'araisa l'chumra. You are not permitted to eat that meat. But if the case didn't happen like that, but if the sofek was not, did you walk into store A or store B, rather the piece of meat was found on the floor, then you follow rov, and then you're allowed to eat the meat. So the Gemara just told us a 2 startling dinim that seem to be absolutely contradictory to one another. On the one hand, the Gemara is telling us that if you don't know which store you went into, you can't eat the meat because Rove somehow is not going to help you. It's a suffix deraisa l'chumra. But if it's not that you don't know which store you went into, but rather you found the meat on the street, then everything is okay. So when all the dust settles in our sugya, as we just have not even scratched the surface of the sugya, there is a huge, huge problem here. Namely, we usually think in very mathematical terms. We think like in terms of statistics. Our entire life is based on statistics. Every decision we make these days, you think about it, all life, you know, is what I'm doing safe? Is it not safe? Is it 99% chance that it's okay? Is it 1% chance? Everything we do is play, and we play a game of statistics in rows throughout our life. One of the biggest challenges is that even though it's true that we basically live all of our lives based on some kind of formulations of Rov, am I going to take this job or not? Nobody has Ruach HaKodesh today. So I'll take the job if I think that it's most probably this is going to be a good job. Can I say with certainty? I cannot say with certainty. I'm going to get married because I'm pretty sure, hopefully a little bit better than pretty sure. Can anybody say 100% sure? It appears to me all the indicators point in the direction this is the right person to marry. All the indications are, this is the right place for me to send my kids to school. This is the right community for me to go. This is the right show for me to... We do this all the time. We calculate and calculate. We put all the factors in. Is this the right school for my kids? Maybe yeah, maybe no. It has these amount of factors in this area. Again, not all factors are created equal. That's why it's not an absolute perfect, you know, mathematical formulation. So the reason why the situation that we're in right now is so complicated is because all the regular rules of Rov, that whether we formulate them halachically or we just think them through, the regular rules of Rov don't apply in situations that we're in right now. As Chazal tells us, because Pikuach Nefesh and Hochanach HaRov, that when it comes to issues of life and death, we don't play games of Rov. There's no such thing as, well, you know, imagine a doctor making the following cheshbon on Shabbos. Most probably, this person doesn't have to go to the hospital. I can't tell you for sure. I'd give it at a 70-30 chance that he may die if he doesn't go to the hospital. But don't worry. Rely on me. There's a rove that'll be okay. So that's shvichas dam. That's ritzicha. So you're not actively, passively. That's shvichas dam. So when it comes to inyanu b'guach nefesh, the regular rules of rove don't apply. Is there ever a point when rove kicks in b'guach nefesh? That's going to be part of tonight's year. So we got a couple of attractions for tonight's year. So that's exactly what the world is omen on, so to speak. At what point can we feel comfortable with a rove and pikuach nefesh? The answers to that question may not be necessarily the same standards that the non-Jewish world is using and the halachic Torah world is using. That may lead to certain discrepancies, so to speak, in certain policies that to the outside world may seem a little bit strange. but they're based on very hardcore halachic understandings that when we begin to apply roh with pikuach nefesh, we get very, very weary as to what that means. But again, that's nothing to do with right now, Shia. That's something just to keep us a little bit, we'll touch a little bit on tonight and some of the issues that we'll talk about. But back to our discussion.
Rabbi, in the case in Chulin, the store is a very simple binary discussion. It's each store is a 50-50 chance. Did I go in this store? Yes or no. I go in this store? Yes or no. And the meat, it's one of all of them. But with the store, it's between himself and each store.
Okay, so Henry, you're 100% right, except if you would ask a statistician, I don't think you would say that. You are looking, you are ahead of the statisticians because you're looking at the world through the eyes of halach of kavua. But I didn't even explain what kavua means. I didn't even say the word kavua yet. But from a pure statistical point of view, it is the identical same suffix where this meat came from. It doesn't make the slightest bit of difference to the mathematician whether the latest suffix begins when this food is on the floor or whether it begins when I walk to the store.
Because in halacha we have chepsa and gavra.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. Yeah, that's going to be part of the story of kavua, 100%. But I'm presenting why kavua is so problematic. Why whenever I say the shiur of kavua, everybody looks at me like I'm crazy. But Rabbi, it's the same statistics. So the answer is you're right. But not everything in the world of halacha depends on math. So
if I may, you may remember. About 3-4 years ago, I approached you with a solution to exactly the problem that you just presented.
Yes, 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 yes.
I had learned the inyan. I was very troubled by the inyan. And the answer is not in halacha. The answer is in statistics. There's a difference between a random distribution and a non-random distribution. In the case where I find the meat in the street, I don't know where it came from, unless I have reason to believe that one of the stores employs a Michigan delivery guy who drops meat around and the others don't, which would change it from a random to a non-random situation. But in the absence of such a thing, the meat has an equal probability of coming from each of the 10 stores. Therefore, statistics apply, and therefore, you can go after the roh. In the case where I'm the one that went in and got the meat, that's the kavua situation. Mm-hmm. In that particular situation, it's not that the latest hasafik occurs from a random distribution. Why? Because whether I'm concentrating, whether I'm distracted, still I know that I have a set of stores that typically I enter. Even if I enter even this trade store as often as I enter the kosher stores, still I know that I'm the one that initiated the action, not the meat. I went in, and because I'm the one that initiated the action, it didn't come from a random distribution. There was not an equal probability that meat could have come from any one of the 10 stores. The likelihood that it came from one particular store is in fact equal because it didn't come from itself, it came from me. So therefore I submit, and I'm comfortable, I've given this a lot of thought, I'm comfortable with the fact that there is no steerer here, that based on the laws of statistics, this works beautifully like a charm.
Halavai, if that is correct, so we've solved Reb Chaim's riddle. Maybe you're right. It could be. I'll tell you what, Mr. Brandstatter. There's a rove that you may be right. We'll leave it like that, okay? I can't tell you whether it's the Yisikman or the Laysikman. I can't tell you. Okay, good. Fair enough. I remember we had this conversation that it's hard to believe it was 3-4 years ago, but I trust your memory on that one. But yeah, okay, good. Very good.
Rebbe, could this be an issue of Hesach Hadas, just like a Korban Taloi? Like the idea that could be...
Hashem Taloi. Well, actually, believe it or not, there is actually a connection between Kavua and Hashem Taloi on a little bit of a different nuance in terms of Ikvay Surah. Well, I don't know whether we'll talk about it right now in the Sugi, but there is some kind of a connection between the two that Hashem Taloi is brought, not when I know I have no idea what's going on. I know I have two pieces of meat, and I know one's kosher, one's treif. I'm not sure which one was which. So there is some kind of a correlation to this Lashon Tov. There is. Okay? Very good. Okay. So we'll present Kavu as follows. Either, like Reb Chaim said, that he just couldn't figure it out, or maybe there is some kind of a statistical, truth to what's going on here. For our purposes, the bottom line is the din exists. So whether the din exists as a pure, unadulterated gezeiras hakasuv that defies our mathematical understanding, or whether with a deeper analysis there really is something in the world of math and science that we could actually put onto, the mice at the end of the day, the din is true. So for our purposes, the din is true. So comes the braisa and presents the din and says that kavua becomes a suffix. If it's nimtza al-chacharov, but if the suffix was found when the meat's on the street, so you follow. So once we've identified the principle of kavua, we have to now raise the following question, a very, very basic question. We want to now combine together two sugyas. We want to take what we know from the last sugyas about bittul berov and what we've just introduced now in terms of kavua, and now fuse and merge the two together. I started before by saying the three different sugyas. There's bittul berov, there's Reb Nissim Kamon, there's Reb Leisik Kamon. In a certain sense, they're not related to one another. But now I want to backtrack on that. I want to backpedal and say, wait a second. Let's begin to merge these two together in the following sense. I have a ta'arovis. And I want to go ahead and eat one of these pieces of meat. I have three pieces of meat. I learned chulin, and the halacha taught me chad betrei botel. So I can apply this as a principle of bittul berov. So very good. The three pieces of meat are sitting on the table. I'm looking at them. I'm staring at them. I know that two are kosher, one is shrek. That I know. I know what the numbers are. Two are kosher, one is shrek. I want to walk over to those three pieces of meat. And I, as the gavra, want to go ahead and take one of the pieces of meat and take one of the pieces of meat and eat that piece of meat. Can I do that? Of course I can do that. That's what we just learned. We just spent 2 weeks on bittul berov. Of course I can do that. Wait a second. How can I do that? Why doesn't that pose a challenge of kavua? The same way that if I walked over to the store, remember me as the gavra, if I walked to the stores, that we would smack it with kavua. We throw the table, throw the book, you would say, sorry, you can't do that. You can't walk into the store. That's kavua. The only time rov works is when something is piresh min harov. So I understand that I have three salamis sitting on the table. I walk away, one of the salamis falls onto the floor, separates itself from the other salamis. So I understand why I'm allowed to eat that salami. That's the halacha equivalent of eating meat that was found on the floor. But the minute that I, as a gavra, am initiating this solution by walking over and taking the meat away, which is most of the time, that's what's happening. Why isn't that kavua? That's a question we have to deal with. That's a fundamental question. All the Rishonim, the Tosafot, the Rashi, everyone's bothered with that question. Why doesn't kavua impact on Hilchos Tarovos? We spoke about Hilchos Tarovos. We spoke about kavua. We separated the two. And now we're going back to merge into it, asking that fundamental question. Why isn't every Tarovos a violation of kavua? Keep that question in the back burner, because that's going to be a fundamental question. With that question in the back burner, let's begin our sugya now inside, with the first of the mamakas. Our sugya begins with the Tosfos. It's a Tosfos on the Kuf, where we left off in the Gemara. It's at the point where the Gemara was discussing our three salamis, and the three salamis should have been okay. We should have said bittul berov. But there's a reason why we didn't say bittul berov. So remember back to a few sugars back, I have my three salamis, two akosha, one straif. It should have been bittul berov. But the reason why the Mishnah says it's not is a chumra mid the rabbanon called chaticha haruya l'skaved. Because they're very, very nice. Maybe salamis is not a good example. Three steaks, they're fancy pieces of cuts of meat, the kinds of meat that I would give to a guest for dinner. And therefore, they're considered to be, the category is called the Davar Choshev, and the Davar Choshev is not Batel. So the Mishnah recorded that even though the Gemara asked for Liftel Beruva, why don't we say Bittel Berov? Because that is the din, Bittel Berov. Sorry, you can't say Bittel Berov because the machashav chaticha b'lis kavei. That was the snip of the Gemara. That's the background of this Tosfos. So Nebuch, I have to split the three salamis in the face and say, I'm so sorry. I cannot eat you salamis because although in a Torah I can eat all three of you, I cannot eat any of you because you're not bottle because of the machashav chaticha b'lis kavei. So Tosfos says, wait a second. The heicha, the top Tosfos. Heicha de pireish chad minayu. Listen to this, says Tosfos. When for me to eat the salamis the way they are, I can't do. But what if one of these three salamis that a minute ago I just passed in the all tray because chadichol is gabe, what if one of the salamis falls down, separates itself from the tarobes? Can I eat it or not? Says Tosfos, why is that different than finding a piece of meat on the floor from 10 stores? When I have 10 stores and each one is staring at me in the face and saying, kosher, 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 treif, and a piece of meat is pireish minayu, it's found on the floor, acharei mahatos permits me to eat it. So if that's okay, why if I have three salamis that I also paskin the treif, but now it's pireish, why don't I say, kol de parish, meruba parish? So just because bittul bero failed me, because chaticha really is kabet is not botel, forget about bittul bero. Remember how Ashiya started? There's bittul bero, and then there's kol de parish, ruba parish, holchanach harov, ruba disa kama. Why did I say that when one of the three salamis fell onto the floor, it should be mutter, not because it's bittul bero, I didn't say bittul bero, the bachash is not botel. Let it be mutter, why should it be any worse than the piece of meat found on the floor that most probably came from a kosher store? This salami on the floor most probably came from one of the kosher salamis because there really were only two out of the three were kosher. So what Tosfos just did for us in five words, they took a sugya that we thought was talking about bittul berov and now turned the tables on us and says, let's turn every bittul berov into a hochanach harov. So Tosfos says, no, you cannot do that. Why? First in the Rambam comes again, the heicha the pirish chad minayu nami yasa, why? Gezeira shemayikach mina kavua. You can't do that, says Tosfos. You know why you can't do that? Because if you're going to eat one of the salamis on the floor, what's going to happen next? Next time this happens, you're going to go over to the table and yank one of the salamis. And doing that would not be acceptable because of kavua. Whenever you're initiating, you're walking over to the items. Walking to the salamis is like walking into the stores. So just as you can't walk into the stores, you can't walk to the salamis. So just as you can't walk to the salamis, you can't eat one of them when they fall on the floor themselves. Tosfos just made up a term. They didn't make it up. They quoted Gemara in Zvachim. Gezeira shemikach mina kavua. So I have one question to ask on Tosfos. I don't understand. If the salami falls on the floor, is that rov or not? Of course that's rov. What's the shah? Of course that's mutter based on rov. But now Nebuch, we're going to tell me, don't do that, because there you're going to come in a kavua. If that's the case, I don't understand the second marmachum. The Braisa told us, if I find the meat on the floor, the meat is okay. Why is it okay? Because there you're going to walk into the store. The same way Tosfos just made up that you can't rely on called the parish, ruba parish. You can't rely on the salami that separated by itself because next time you're going to end up going to the salamis. So let's unravel, let's undo every rove, every rubidisa come on. Every single case of rubidisa come on. Every time you find meat on the floor, it should be no good because it's too easy to make a mistake because there you're going to go into the stores, which would be an isidereis of kavua. So I don't understand the Tosfos b'chila v'yatzel. So we have so many things swirling around. I didn't say we'd have any answers today. We have to first identify all the problems in the sugya. So the first problem that we identified, the pre-our potential solution was the very essence of kavua. There's something fishy going on. The dosha of kavua, at least from our vantage point, seemed difficult to wrap our hands around where kavua comes from, what's it based on, is it really statistically accurate or not. The very notion of kavua in the world of Rome was hard for us to digest. Yet, maybe Mr. Brent, that is, you know, fascinating idea, helps us, softens that blow a little bit. But when all the dust settles, kavua is a puzzle. Mark wants a puzzle for it, exists a puzzle for it, so we accept it. Whether we can now put it into terminology and statistics that makes us resonate with the mathematical model or not, or whether we just defer to the Gzeres HaKasav and call it Paraduma and then don't ask any questions. Kavua is here to stay. Kavua exists. No question about it. And we thought that Kavua is one sugya, and Hokhanak Arob is another sugya, and the two of them do with each other. And our Tosfos turned the tables on us and says, wait a second, that's so simple. Every time you have a Tarobes, you can also discuss the rules of Kavua, also discuss the world, the rules of called the Parish. Tosfos then introduced the possibility of a Tarobes that failed us based on Bitl Barov because of the Bechoshev. Let's still pursue the avenue of called the Parish Ruva Parish, to which Tosfos said, no, you can't do that Gzera to Kavua, which put us right back against into the wall. Wait a second, there's a Gzera of Kavua? I never heard of that Gzera of Kavua. If that Gzera exists, what's going on in the Brice and Ruzach HaKharov? So to say the least, we have a lot of problems, a lot of things that just as the introduction to Kavua, that the pieces are not, the numbers, no pun intended, the numbers are not adding up. There is something in this sugya that is just not adding up. We really, really don't even have a beginning of understanding of what's going on in this sugya. So hopefully, Me'at Hashem, when we continue to tackle the sugya, hopefully next year on Friday, we'll start to come up with some yeseldos to give some solutions. Again, if we accomplish this morning just to realize that Kavua is not a simple sugya, there's a lot of things flying around, but hopefully, Me'at Hashem, we will walk through the sugya. And we'll try to develop the one or two basic, because the basic yeseldos in our sugya are, we begin to be able to ease our way through to get a better understanding of the depth of, again, one of the most difficult sugyas in Shas, but we really will hopefully be able to do it starting on Friday to be able to get our feet wet as to what some of the yeseldos of Kavua. So what we accomplished today, what we presented all the problems, or many of the problems, and hopefully Shem will start to present some of the solutions on Friday.
Question?
Yeah.
Why isn't the fact that I never walk into a non-kosher store a factor?
Because I wasn't paying attention to what I was doing. You know, again, I think Dr. Fisher has the image of Tina 2020. You know, I've never been inside the Caribbean store, but I imagine that it has a different ambiance than some of the others.
That's the point.
I would have said, you know, the minute you walk into the kosher store, you can hear the music is different. I don't want
That's
to say
right.
that because sometimes it's not true. Sometimes the music is identical.
We'll no, but there's zero chance that
not
at
always.
Some
not
point,
always.
Once you, even if you walked in by mistake, that I can see. But then you're seeing somebody you never saw before.
Right, but
you're,
but again,
me,
right, but
you're not going to buy there.
Right, but no, Dr. Fisher is using that imagery of a very organized store. You know, with a hey, wait a second. That guy behind the counter doesn't look like the Mashgiach, you know. Hey, wait a second, that menu looks a little bit strange to me. Why is your picture of Chazar on the wall? You know, on the other hand, the stores of Chazal were not quite the restaurants of Bergen County 2020. The quote unquote stores are.
You can even make it work in Bergen County.
It was a meat market. It was a meat market. There was one store selling meat here, and one store selling meat here, and one store selling here. They all looked the same. They had the same animals hanging from the things. Everybody looked the same. So people look the same, the animals look the same, everything looks the same. So I'm not so sure. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Picture a situation where I go regularly to that trade store to buy food for my dog, all right? Mm-hmm. So I'm there all the time. That's the image that I have in my mind, how such a thing could happen. Mm-hmm. Of course, when I buy for people, for myself, for anybody, my guests, I buy from a kosher place. But for the dog, I can get it cheaper. I go into the trade place. So the ambiance, the person behind the counter are all familiar to me. That's why I didn't notice the difference.
Right. Could be. The image I always think is always like the image of the shuk. You know, again, I'm not in any shape or form being multi-laws in any hashkochas of any stores in Machne Yehuda. But... you know, let's say for a person who would take the following, you know, I eat the fruits and vegetables under this hashkacha, but I don't necessarily eat them on the other hashkacha. You can, unless you know the shuk really well, if you're a novice in the shuk, and you're going to tell me which stall the shuk looks differently, they all look the same. They're all selling the same tomatoes, they're all selling the same grapes. The guy behind the counter looks, everything looks the same. One of them is hashkacha X, Y, and Z that I like, and one of them has a expired to da from 10 years ago for somebody who maybe I shouldn't rely on in the first place. So I think that the imagery is a little bit less less clear than the image of a nice sit-down restaurant in West Anglia Avenue. So that's my take on that. Anyway, bottom line is we have a lot of problems with Kavua, which is okay. It's a right to start a sugya with a lot of kashas. hopefully we'll appreciate that some of the tirutzim come our way in future shiurim. Okay. Henry, you still on or you went off?